Well, dear brethren, I know we're all looking forward to Brother Bob Goodman's discourse this morning. And Brother Bob has chosen as his topic, who was that hero? Who was that hero? And we'll turn over to Brother Bob.
Well, good morning, brethren. You know, I recently attended a movie with my family called The Phantom. And that is, of course, based on a comic book hero. And The Phantom was this man in purple who wore a mask. And throughout the story, the characters wanted to know, who is that hero? That was kind of the question. Who is he? They wanted to know more about him. You know, we also watched the Olympics recently. And we were very enthralled at one point when there was a young gymnast, a woman who, despite a leg injury, made one final vault so that the United States team could win the gold medal. And a, you know, similar thought came into our mind. Who was this person? Who was this hero? You know, a hero is defined as a person of great courage, spirit, and so forth, and one who is especially who has undergone great danger or difficulty. They've sacrificed themselves on behalf of others. You know, we have in our lives a number of heroes as well. But rather than being comic book characters or Olympians, we usually look at the real figures, the heroes and the figures found in the scriptures, the biblical characters. And so this morning we're going to look at one hero found in the 11th chapter of Hebrews. You know, in the first 31 verses of this chapter, there are a number of heroes listed. Heroes of faith: Abel, Enoch, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Jacob, Joseph, Moses, Joshua and Israel, and Rahab. What do we know about these individuals? Well, you know, in looking at this, I went and looked up each one of these in the scriptures. And most of these individuals have many, many verses, if not chapters or books, written about them. But there's one of these heroes in particular that we have very little information about. This kind of intrigued me. That hero of faith, the hero of faith that we have the least information on, is one called Enoch. We've got a handout that my personal assistant's going to give out now that will help us as we go through this study. I'll bring out some of the points. We realize that the Lord and the Apostle Paul, in writing this chapter in Hebrews, had some very specific information that he wanted conveyed on each of these heroes of faith. And they are, in fact, examples to each and every one of us. And so that was the intent in this study, that we learn a little bit more about this very mysterious man called Enoch. You know, as I looked through the scriptures, I could only find 11 scriptures in the entire Bible that referred directly to Enoch. Only 11. Even Rahab had two or three times that many. We're going to go ahead and read through those. We're going to read all of them, all 11 of them. The first portion of the scriptures that deal with Enoch are found in the 5th chapter of Genesis. Read first the 18th and 19th verse and then the 21st through 24th. And Jared lived 162 years and begat Enoch. And Jared lived after he begat Enoch 800 years and begat sons and daughters. And then skipping down to the 21st verse in the 5th chapter of Genesis. And Enoch lived 65 years and begat Methuselah. And Enoch walked with God after he begat Methuselah 300 years and begat sons and daughters. And all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. We have another reference to Enoch's lineage, and this is found in 1 Chronicles 1:3. And here, is really a list of lineage down through Noah. And in 1 Chronicles 1:3 we read Henoch and Methuselah and Lamech. So here they're giving once again the list of these from Adam down to the flood. And you'll notice this time that he uses a little different name, but it is Enoch, it's Henoch. And Jim Parkinson gave a talk a while back as to why sometimes they add an H to the front of some of these names. But once again, based on the lineage that's given here, yet another mention of Enoch. Not much more information, though, just his lineage. We also found an account of Enoch in the 3rd chapter of Luke, in the 37th verse. And remember, Luke, our accountant, was giving account of the lineage of Mary all the way down. And in the 37th chapter, in the 37th verse, it reads, which was the son of Methuselah, which was the son of Enoch, which was the son of Jared, which was the son of Mahlalel, which was the son of Canaan. So once again, we have his lineage being laid out. Two more places where Enoch is mentioned. In the 11th chapter of Hebrews, in the 5th verse, here's where the Apostle Paul mentions him as one of the heroes of faith. Hebrews 11:5. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. Before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. And then our last selection, and this is found in Jude in the 14th and 15th verses. And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000 of his saints, to execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of their ungodly deeds, which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches, which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. This is it. This is all the account we have in the scriptures of Enoch. 11 short verses. But what do we know about him? On the surface, we know very little. Well, they reveal his lineage. His lineage is laid out very specifically in Genesis, 1 Chronicles, Luke, and also, and that's the extent of it there. Well, also in Jude, he gives a little bit of the lineage there as well. So we understand what his lineage or his family line was. We understand a little bit about his faith, and that is given little clues of that are given to us in Genesis, Hebrews, and Jude. We understand a little bit about his prophecy, and that is mainly given to us in Jude. And finally, we have a little glint or hint about his death, and that's found in both the Genesis and the Hebrews accounts. So we thought we would look at each one of these categories, because what we see on the surface is not always what we see if we delve a little bit deeper. What about his lineage? You know, when we speak about lineage, we're talking about family. We're talking about his family. And I'm going to take a little poll here. How many people here have known their grandparents? Okay, how many people have known their great-grandparents? How many people here have known their great-great-grandparents? What about Enoch's family? Well, we know that at one point in his life, Enoch knew his son Methuselah, his grandson Lamech. It's not that unusual. His father Jared, his grandfather Mahlalel, his great-grandfather Canaan, his great-great-grandfather Enos, his great-great-great-grandfather Seth, and his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather Adam. Not only did he know them, but they were all alive at the same time. So you see, this is a little different situation than what we are used to. In fact, it is fair to say that during his lifetime, he probably knew the majority of people that had ever lived. A little different than our situation as well. If we also look at his life, and you can look at the little chart here, We did this to kind of clarify, because I think laying things out in a chart format kind of shows. You notice we didn't put specific dates on each of the charts. It's to show you the relative things that had occurred. But we see here that Enoch had a relatively short lifeline, didn't he? He didn't live all that long. He was outlived by his grandson, his son, his father, his great-grandfather, his great-great-grandfather, and his great-great-great-grandfather. So we see that also the majority of his family outlived him. You know, the fifth chapter of Genesis goes into some detail and lays out his lineage. And it's interesting when we look at that fifth chapter as well. I noticed one thing in reading through it just today. For the majority of the lineage down through Noah, they tell you who it was, how long it was before he started begetting, how long after that he lived, and then how long he lived in total, which kind of confirms the two, you know, he lived 130 years and then begat sons and daughters, and so on and so forth. So it gives the lineage. But I noticed one thing with regards to Enoch and Noah. There's additional information given. All the others, it's basically a list of begats and who their sons were and the time periods. Well, if we lay all of these things out, and the problem when we're reading about these begats is we kind of think only three or four generation dimensional. When we lay them all out, we realize that a great number of these people not only knew each other, they lived together, they knew each other personally because their lives overlapped. They lived a long time, by and large. I produced the chart to help us get over that problem so that we could see relative when Enoch lived. I will also say that the period zero is when Adam was created on forward. So you don't see the BC dates, but we're seeing forward up to the flood. The flood is the vertical dashed line at 1656 years after the creation of Adam. Okay? Also, some other interesting points on the chart. These are a little bit fine, and I'm not sure they came out as well on the Xerox as they did on the original. You will realize that Lamech died some 5 years prior to the flood. You see just a tiny, tiny space there before the flood. And the indication is that Methuselah died the year of the flood. And according to the scriptures, the indication is that he did not die in the flood, but prior to the flood. And we'll take a little look at that in a little more detail as we go on. So that kind of frames this chart. We see from this that Enoch's experience was that he was the seventh, if you count up. He was the seventh from Adam, seventh generation. Noah was the tenth. He lived a relatively short life, as you can see by his short lifeline. So that's what we know about his lineage. So he was seven generations in. We also know, as it's stated in the scriptures, that he lived 365 years. And this was relatively short. I think it was actually mentioned a little bit in our first study that most of the individuals during this period lived in the 800 and 900 year ranges. And our suggestion will be that Lamech's life was perhaps shortened a little bit so that he could die prior to the flood. But when we look at Noah, he was, you know, right back up there with the long lifeline. And that was those prior to the flood. So that's a little about his lineage. Now we understand a little bit more about his family. He had a big family. He knew a lot of people because, remember, they kept on begetting all during this period. So there was quite a population there. And we feel that he knew a number of them, a goodly number of them, personally. Also realized that they were in their prime, so to speak, in the 150-year range was when they really started, most of them started having kids. So they were in their, probably where we would be in our 30s or 20s, somewhere past the century mark. So that was a little different arrangement as well. Let's look just for a moment at his faith. This is why he's really mentioned in Hebrews, and one of the reasons that he's mentioned in Jude as well. You know, he is mentioned as one of two individuals in the Bible that walked with God. There's only two. If you look at walked with God in the Bible, you're going to find two of them. And these two individuals are individuals who walked during that first dispensation or that period up until the flood. Okay? In Genesis 5:24 we read, "And Enoch walked with God." Very succinct and to the point. And then if we skip down to Genesis 6:9, we have the second individual who walked with God. And there we read, "Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God." So these are the two individuals out of all the scriptures that are described as walking with God. Well, what does that mean? You know, I found one scripture, I think, that perhaps summarizes it very, very nicely. And that is found in Deuteronomy 10:12, where we read, "What doth the Lord require of thee, but to fear the Lord God," and we realize this fear is reverence, as is spoken here, "so to reverence God, to walk in his ways," walk with God, "to love him, and to serve thy God with all thy heart and thy soul." This shows the different aspects of a walk with God. Reverence, walking with him, going with him, love, and service. And really that's the embodiment of the faith that God required at that time and at this time. It kind of reminded me, when I started reading it, when I first came upon the scripture, I thought it must have been Micah 6:8, didn't you? "What doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God." Very, very similar, but it breaks out some of the aspects a little more. This reveals the key elements of walking with God: actions, justice, mercy, zeal, love, progress, patient endurance, and obedience. Really, the overall suggestions as we looked at some of the other writings on this was that another way you might say it is that Noah was in fellowship with God, that Enoch was in fellowship with God. They walked with God. They were in a relationship with him. And this was despite this giant family that was around him. You notice none of these other individuals were described as walking with God. So despite all of those around them, all the things that were going on in the world at that time, despite family influences, and this was a very much a family situation, you'll realize, as you see these generations laid out. Despite all of those influences, these two individuals decided to walk with God. And as a result, we would suggest that they were unique to all of those around them. In Hebrews 11:5, the Apostle Paul mentions these as one of Enoch as one of those heroes of faith. "By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death. And the reason is given at the end of this verse, that he pleased God." You know, when we read that scripture, bless the Lord, O my soul, we feel that Enoch fulfilled that. The Lord was very pleased with him. This was the walking with God was the basis of his faith and the basis of his obedience to God's will. So what he did was pleasing and acceptable to God, and he had fellowship with God. So we get here, as we delve into these things, this walk with God, we can expand out a little bit about what we know about this hero of faith. What about his prophecy? His prophecy is really given to us only in the Jude account, in the 14th and 15th verse. And Enoch also, the 7th from Adam, prophesied of these, saying, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000 of his saints." And the suggestion here is this 10,000 of his saints could be interpreted with his holy myriads. That's from the comment book. So we see that it's really talking about his return with the church to execute judgment upon all and to convince all that are ungodly among them of their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against them. Let me ask you this. Do you think this was a popular message in his day? I think not. I think that being a prophet has never been a popular job, because what's the saying, that a prophet is not accepted in his own time? We realize that this was a very difficult job, that it involved saying things that were not in the popular among men. You know, traditionally I had thought that, as we thought about these generations here, that it was the time of Noah when there was a great corruption, when the fallen angels came down, when things started to get very bad. But we realized that those fallen angels had time. They had periods of years where they had time to have children and so on and so forth. So it actually was a period of time. Now, as far as I can tell, I have not been privy to understand when that period started. But we do feel that there was some corruption at this time. We do feel that there was an ungodly generation. You know, traditionally we think it was 800 years hence, but that's not to say that its roots did not start here. We actually have some scriptures that indicate and speak of these ungodly deeds. And that this Hebrews 11:13 is one of them. It kind of gives us the impression, and this is Hebrews 11:13 is talking about those that were spoken of in the first 12 verses of Hebrews. So it's talking about Abel, it's talking about Enoch, it's talking about Noah. And listen to what it says. All these died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off. And they were persuaded of them and embraced them and confessed them that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. Brethren, their message was no better accepted than our message is. We need to realize that they were preaching and prophesying and giving forth this message, and they were seen probably either with lack of interest or maybe even persecution. You know, I made a statement that perhaps the descent of man started somewhere during this period. And we can just take a look at that. You know, a number of times the Lord indicates information through names. So let's look at the names. And perhaps I'm going to suggest that the names are going to indicate man's descent. And we're going to skip Enoch and Noah because we know that these two individuals walked with God. Enoch's name means dedicated. Or in another place I found, they gave a little different word. One that perhaps it touched me a little more. Consecrated. So Enoch's name meant dedicated or consecrated, and Noah's name meant rest. But let's go through the names of the other generations, the other heads of the generations. Adam meant red, Seth meant substitute, Enos meant man, Canaan meant possessor, and Jared, Enoch's father, his name meant descent. Now listen to the names after this. Methuselah's name meant a dart, or there's a footnote in Rotherham that says, when he dies, it will come, pointing to a time when things would change. And I like that very much. And Lamech's name, Noah's father, meant destroyer. So we went from red, substitute, man, possessor on one side to descent, to when he dies, it will come, to destroyer. Did you notice the change? There was a change in the arrangement. Those names kind of went from light into a very definite dark tone. And that started with Jared, Enoch's father. So we will suggest that perhaps this was the time when evil began to flourish. And if that is the case, then that would also be a time when Enoch would meet with resistance. His message would not be welcomed. And we kind of have a confirmation of this. When it says that they were pilgrims and strangers, all of these heroes of faith, it's an indication that they were not fitting in with the rest of the world of mankind. But what about his death? Let's look at his death for a moment. And you know, his death is one of the things that led me to this study, because I had a real problem with some statements that were made about his death. On the surface, the account of his death, especially the one given to us by the Apostle Paul in Hebrews, seemed to throw us a curve. Let me read it. It's found in Hebrews 11:5. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death. He was not found because God had translated him, for before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. I don't know about you, but this, the way the Apostle Paul states this kind of makes me scratch my head. How do we reconcile this, brethren? That he should not see death. How do we true that statement up? Well, you know, I've heard a couple of suggestions, and I talked to some of the brethren about, well, what does that mean? One interpretation was, or one suggestion was, that no one had died during his short lifetime. Remember, he only lived 365 years, so that's not much. When people are living 900 plus years, 365 is like losing one of your kids. So the suggestion was that no one had died during his lifetime. And that might be a reasonable suggestion. Except look at the chart. His great, 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 great grandfather died. Adam died during his lifetime. So maybe you could more liberally interpret that he didn't personally see him die, but in any case, death was experienced during his lifetime. And the scriptures do document that fact. So that discounts that thought somewhat. Another interpretation might be that he didn't die but went straight to heaven. Well, you know, that one really gives us a whole lot of problems. That doesn't jive with many of our basic doctrines. The wages of sin is death. The soul that sinneth, it shall die. Christ the first fruits, so on and so forth. And all the statements about the ancient worthies having a lower estate than those of the church. So how would, you know, that one really doesn't reconcile at all. In order to find the right answer, we need to understand the statement, should not see death. And we must be clear on this before we proceed to this matter of translating, because we've got two problems here, not seeing death and also this translation thing that's spoken of by the Apostle Paul. But we're going to split it up. We're going to confirm once and for all what is meant by this not seeing death. Once we've reconcile that in our minds, then we go on to the second point and clarify that and hopefully come to an understanding that will make everyone agree, or at least make everyone think. This expression, he was not, is found throughout the scriptures. We were looking at the Hebrews 11:5 account of his death. We turn back to Genesis 5:24, we read, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not. That's what it says there. He was not. Well, let's look at other expressions or other examples where this expression, and he was not, or so-and-so was not, is used in the scriptures. One is found in Genesis 37:30. And this one I'll read. And returned to his brethren and said, the child is not. Whither shall I go? And this was an account where Reuben used the expression, remember, they had thrown Joseph in the pit, and they were going to leave him to die. And then there was a change of mind, and they went ahead and sold him off. Well, when Reuben returned, the pit was empty, and so he said, the child is not. He's not there. He doesn't exist. Whither shall I go? Another account, very similar. This also with in Genesis, and this is a few chapters hence, down in the 42nd chapter in the 36th verse. And this is an account with Jacob. And Jacob their father said unto them, me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and ye will take Benjamin away. So he's saying, Joseph is no more, Simeon is no more, and my heart is heavy laden because you want to take away Benjamin. But he uses the expression, is not. Joseph is not, Simeon is not. We have yet another scripture that is very familiar to us that uses the same phrase. Jeremiah 31:15, and also there's an account of the same thing in Matthew 2:8. Rachel weeping for her children and refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. Everybody's familiar with what happened to Rachel's children. They were dead. They were gone. You know, when we look to vines, it suggests that this expression was not, when applied to human existence, suggests going to one's death. And these scriptures really reconcile with that. They really agree with that. They true up with that thought. Going to one's death. So the suggestion was when God said, Noah, and he was not, he's saying Noah was dead. Maybe that's not good enough evidence for you. Because, you know, this Noah account's a little bit strange, especially the Hebrews' account of his death. So let's go on. If you're still not convinced, we have an absolute assurance of his death, and that is given in the Scriptures. And that's found in Hebrews. And this is Hebrews in the 13th chapter. Now, in the 13th chapter, remember, he's talking about these heroes of faith that he has discussed in the first 11 verses. He's talking about Abel, Enoch, Noah, and I think Abraham was the next one. But anyway, he's talking about those that it's kind of like he's gotten to this point, and now he's going to give you a summary. And here's his summary. These all died in faith, having not received the promises, but having seen them afar off. So if you want an assurance that Enoch died, here it is. These all died in faith. So you got the first 12 verses that list these heroes of faith, and then it kind of says, look back at these. Every one of these died in faith. Okay? Kind of reconciles with us what we have in Psalm 89:48. A question is posed. What man is he that liveth and shall not see death? And our answer is none. And that is confirmed here. Enoch died. We have a double assurance that he died. First of all, the expression that he was not. He had gone to his grave. And finally, the direct statement in Hebrews 13 that says, all of these died in faith. They died. They're dead. So that really helps us out quite a bit with this account in Hebrews. And I think the Hebrews account is perhaps the most troublesome just because of the way it's phrased. But luckily we have to balance with that Genesis 5 account, and they're talking about the same thing. So we can kind of true them up in our minds. Hebrews 11:5 once again. So now we've established that he did die. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death. And we're going to talk about the should not see death a little more. And was not found because God had translated him. What is this translation? Once again, if we turn back to the Genesis 5 account, we can read it more or less in parallel. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, he died, and God took him. You know, when we look at the meaning of these words, it by and large means that he was translated, transposed, or sent to another. He had undergone a change of nature, basically. Taking him away is how it's expressed in the Genesis account, and I think that kind of makes it a little easier to understand. Let's look back at our chart. Enoch's lifeline was short. What could this taking away mean? Well, one of the things that it could mean, we know that during some of these generations that there was a great deal of persecution. One of the meanings could be that he was taken and protected in the same way that Job was. Remember when Job prayed to be put in the grave to await the resurrection? That he would have a way of escape. That's one of the thoughts. What it means to be taken away. There's perhaps another one that I'll suggest. When we look at his lifeline, he died in his prime. It'd be the equivalent of one of our kids dying in their 20s. He was in his prime. He had just started to have family and so forth. I mean, he was only 365 years old. Most people were living 900. So he was in his prime. So another suggestion might be, when he took him prematurely. He took him before he saw the corruption of the flesh that we see as our flesh ages and gets older, and, you know, as a result of Adam's sin. We might also look at, that kind of describes that taking him process. We might also look at other examples of those who have been translated. Who else has been translated? Well, we know that there is another individual who was translated. You remember? Elijah. He was translated or removed, that the Lord he might not experience death at the hands of a corrupt generation. That was the bottom line. He was one who is described as translated as well. But there's yet another group. And this group is yet future. This is the group that's described in Daniel 12:1 when we read that his people shall be delivered. Remember, it's those that are in 1 Corinthians 15:51 and 52. It says, "Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye." And then as we continue a little later, "And the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." This is that translation that our friends in nominal Christendom talk about being taken away in the clouds, right? Remember, this is in the last day when mankind would no longer hear the words that were being spoken. They would fall void. And so this is yet another class that is promised a translation. Even this class requires a change. They require that they go into death so that the fleshly body might die, so that this new and spiritual body might be raised up. They are promised an escape in an hour when there would no longer be any hearing ears. Perhaps this is evidenced by the fact that not only the name, the meaning of the names of Jared and Methuselah and Lamech, but we realized in the account of Noah, when we look at Noah's account, who helped Noah? Look on this chart and tell me who helped Noah. It was Noah and his sons. Ever strike you strange that Lamech and Methuselah, they're not mentioned in the account as helping Noah? So we feel that Noah stood alone. We see that this was a decline that was going on during this time. This was a time when, as it's described, that men would think evil continually. And perhaps Enoch was translated and not found, because eventually he might have been sought to be killed or put to death at their hands. This is just a basic principle that the Lord has when the trial or the temptation becomes too great, that he offers protection. So perhaps the reason that his life is shorter is because God took him at that time. There was a reason for that. What do we know? Well, we know four things for sure about this translation. You know, we could conjecture, and it would be good to discuss these things to see if the brethren have any other thoughts. But we know four things absolutely about the translation and his death. First of all, his body was not found. And that's another thing that kind of leads us to believe that God had a part in taking him away. Remember the other one that whose body was not found, right? Abraham. His lifespan was short in comparison to the those of his time. And also, he did not really see the corruption of old age. God was involved in his transformation personally and with taking him away. We know that as a fact. And as we have already noted, he did die. So he did go into the grave. So we understand these aspects of that translation. And we would suggest that it meant ushering him or hiding him in the grave at the time. Well, what else do we know? We know that Enoch's name meant dedicated or consecrated. And I especially like the thought consecrated when I ran across that in one of the interpretations. We know that he was the seventh from Adam, that he had sons and daughters, that he was a hero of faith, that he walked with God during in an ungodly and corrupt world, that he prophesied about the Lord returning with his church to judge the world, that he lived 365 years, that he died at a relatively young age, that he was taken or translated by God, and that he is listed as one of the ancient worthies. Well, who or what did he picture? You know, it's kind of interesting when you look at Pastor Russell's writings at different periods. At one point in an early article, he more or less calls him a type, and then in the question book some years later, he says, not really a type, but he may picture something, but he doesn't get real specific. I think Enoch is here for a very distinct purpose for us. And so let's look at some of the things we know, and perhaps we can get an idea of what he pictures. Once again, we're going to look at what we know about him, and I'm going to put it in a little different terms so that we can see what maybe he pictures. His name means consecrated. He is the son of Jared, and Jared's name meant descent. So he was consecrated during a period of corruption. His son's name, Methuselah, meant when he is dead, it shall come. The flood shall come. The complete change in that whole dispensation. He was the seventh generation from Adam. Seven, our young people know this one, a perfect spiritual number. Remember 10, perfect earthly number. 7, perfect spiritual number. Anna's nodding her head yes. So he was the perfect spiritual generation. He lived 365 years. You know, that kind of seemed peculiar to me at first. Why would he live 365? Why not 364, 366? Doesn't that seem kind of peculiar? I'm wondering whether that points forward to a Gentile calendar. A different arrangement, per se. Our calendar is 365 days in a year, and we know we have the scripture that talks about a year for a day and a day for a year. So we'll just suggest that perhaps that points to a Gentile period. He walked with God and was in personal fellowship with God. He was a hero of faith. He prophesied the Lord's return and his kingdom. He was persecuted. He was ignored in a corrupt generation. He pleased God with his faith and obedience, and he was faithful unto death. We know that because Hebrews later on tells us all of these were faithful unto death. And he was taken away by God when he died. What do you think he pictures? To my way of thinking, I can't help but think, based on his message, the numbers that are involved here, that he must be somewhat of a picture, not a type, but a picture of the church. He was born of descending flesh. He was dedicated, a perfect heavenly man, taken from the Gentiles, who walked with God, whose foundation was faith, who sought God's will, who witnessed to God, of God, among a corrupt generation, who pleased God, who was faithful unto death, and hidden in death, that he might not see the corruption as his reward for his purity and his vigilance. We'll let you work out what you think he was a picture of. One further observation. We see that Noah was the 10th generation, and he also walked with God. But he's yet another picture, and that would be for another talk. But 10 being a perfect earthly number, we'll leave that to your imagination there and to your study. The question remains, who was this hero? Well, I think he was a hero who was an example, a personal example for the church at the end of the age. At a time when very few would hear the word, very few would respond. At a time when there was a promise from God that those in the very last days would be transformed, would be taken away out of this corrupt generation. Hopefully we have a better understanding as to why he is listed as a hero of faith. Hopefully we have seen some of the aspects of his life and what we are being called to emulate. Hopefully we can get a little excited about just gleaning a little bit more about this Bible hero. We'll close with these thoughts. Hebrews 11, 13 through 16. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed them, that they were strangers and pilgrims in the land. For they that saw such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had an opportunity to return. But now they desire a better country, which is heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. Our conclusion, Hebrews 11:6. But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is the rewarder of them that diligently seek him. Faith is the basis of our hope. It is the song of our desire. It is the energizing force and zeal of our daily walk. We, like Enoch, desire to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God in total dedication and zeal. May the Lord add his blessing.
Sure, I'd like to thank Brother Bob for those good lessons, and he answered that question, who was that hero, with his discussion on Enoch, hero of faith. Thank you, Brother Bob. Appreciate that.